Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible, as always, by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Soon, it's a fiduciary responsibility. That'll be the law. A fiduciary is legally and ethically obligated to act in the best interest of their client. Being a registered investment advisor, KPP Financial has carried out this responsibility for its clients for many years. Do you have questions about fiduciary responsibility? Send a note. Click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. End of commercial. And now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of InvestTalk. It is May 17, 2016. And one of our talking points today poses a question. Should you be content with lower returns? Should you be content with that? Is today's lackluster, mostly flat kind of market the new normal? 40% of U.S. retired savers said yes. This flat market is a new normal. And this is Wells Fargo doing some surveys and research. So investors obviously take a pretty dim view of the stock market right now and of the long-term performance, because I think this is the new normal. 81% of investors say they sold stocks amid the volatility we recently had. 39% say the recent stock market volatility is making their life stressful. So what do you do about it? Now, if you're hanging in there, well, good for you. That's great. If you do contemplate a change in your strategy, it's a good idea to get a second opinion. And I'm not just saying that because that's my business. Seek some calm perspective from any trusted financial professional you know. Emotional decisions are not a good strategy. And you know, if you're stressed out, you'll tend to make an emotional decision. So get a solid, calm second opinion from someone you know that you can trust. Now, the fundamentals still apply no matter what the market is doing. I've been saying this for years and years and years. Does the stock overvalue? The stock undervalued? In some years, it stays overvalued. The stock market right now is pretty much overvalued, trading at an 18 PE. That's overvalued. Why? Because the long-term history of the S&P 500 is 15, not 18. Now, I will say this. It can be a little bit higher than 15 when there's very little inflation, and that's what we have, very little inflation. So it's not super out of overvalued. It's not horrendously overvalued, but the problem we've had is sales and earnings have been going down the last three quarters for corporations. So, you know, we always talk about risk on the show. How much risk do you want to take? And the stock market is of itself, all by itself, risky. By its nature, it's risky. How much risk do you want to take? That's a better way to look at it than saying I'm nervous or stressful, the market's not moving up, and I'm invested in it. Well, first of all, find out how much risk you should be taking so you would be comfortable with your investments. And that kind of, you know, it's a process. It's not easy to find that out, but it is doable. Now, do you own stocks or do you own funds? Some of the same principles apply to both, but you know, you got to look at the fundamentals. Let's take a text question from a listener for the first hour. You know, so we hope you bring your questions or comments to us this hour. Before we go any further, let's check in now for our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve or Justin. Love the show. This is Robert from Sacramento. I had a question about all these energy companies that are going bankrupt. What exactly happens if they go bankrupt? Because I had always assumed they would go out of business, but a lot of the articles that I'm reading are that when they go bankrupt, they just ask the courts to protect them from making any debt payments while they try to restructure and stay in business. I was assuming that when all these companies were going to start going bankrupt, it would open up assets as they went out of business for a lot of the other companies to purchase. If you could just explain to me the pros and cons to filing bankruptcy, because right now, Lynn Energy is an example that I'm using. It seems like they're just using bankruptcy to cancel out equity holders and not pay debt while they restructure and then get back into business, almost like General Motors. I will listen on the podcast. Thank you.
That's exactly what they're doing. There's two types of bankruptcies. There's Chapter 11 and Chapter 7. Chapter 7 is where they liquidate all their assets and give them back to the bondholders first and then stock shareholders second if there's anything left. At Chapter 11 is where they reorganize and they get protection from the creditors and they go to a court and ask them to reorganize, and this is, they make a suggestion. They have a suggestion. The court decides whether, no, that's not good enough. In reorganization, they will usually, the bondholders are always ahead of the stockholders. And many times in reorganization, like the case in GM, the stockholders get zip, get nothing. And so you've lost all your money if you're a stockholder of the old bankrupt company. And now it's the new one coming out of bankruptcy and have new shareholders, whoever wants to buy it, whoever wants to be shareholders. And that's exactly what they do. Most of these bankruptcies, that's how it's going to go because they have lots of assets and they're just trying to reorganize, pay off, or get rid of some of their debt so they can continue operating. Now, sometimes there's no future in your operation, therefore you file Chapter 7, and you just liquidate. But a lot of these oil fracking companies, they have assets, so they're reorganizing. And we're having more and more and more of them are going bankrupt. So, appreciate the question. Good one. Should you be content with lower returns? This has serious implications for how you invest. That's going to be our main talking point today. So we'll talk about that. There was an article I read this morning about financial regrets for older folks like me, anybody in retirement or approaching retirement, and they listed the top, you know, 5 or 6 regrets, financial regrets. So we're going to go over those. Why did Warren Buffett buy $1 billion worth of Apple? I know Justin touched on this yesterday, but I want to explore it a little bit more. And Chinese consumers are spending just like us. That's a mega trend that's taking place there, and I want to discuss that a little bit. It's very interesting. they've been pushing their economy to be more consumer-driven, and that's exactly what's going on. And the consumer in China acts very much like the consumer in the United States. You give them the freedom to spend what they want, they'll spend it how they want. And most people around the world spend it similarly when they start making enough money to have some excess cash. So I think that's pretty interesting. Those are going to be our talking points today. Let's first look at the market then. The Dow is down 181, the NASDAQ down 60, the S&P down 20 after being up a very similar amount yesterday. Just getting a lot of volatility, a lot of volatility with the market going nowhere. Nothing new. Right now it's trendless. One of these days it's going to break down or break up. And I wish I could tell you which way, because no one knows. We are going to have a correction. I just can't tell you when. And I can't tell you how much, but corrections always come. They always do. Usually you get, and history, if you go back many years, a 10% correction twice a year is not unusual. We had one right at the beginning of the year in January. But there's years where you don't have it. You know, that's possible. How come, though, I think we're reverting back to the norm? I really do. Anyways, that's what happened today. That's what's going on in the market. Why did the market fall? Well, a lot of people are blaming some of the Federal Reserve people who were speaking, some of the presidents were speaking out about, yeah, interest rates are on the table from June, maybe. We'll see. I'm glad you could spend some time with me today. I'll try to share some ideas, bring you some information, and above all, answer questions you might have. It's a good idea to get them early. The hour can go by pretty darn quick, and it can crowd up pretty fast. I welcome your call, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Jim from Indiana. Hey, I'm looking at Bungie, symbol BG, as a possible buy. Looks like this is a pretty decent PE possible value play. Just wanting your thoughts on that. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
And it is a value play. BG is a symbol, Bungie Limited, out of White Plains, New York. Processes grains, oil seeds, and produces fertilizer, edible oil, and milling products sold worldwide. It's an $8.4 billion company, so it's in the agricultural business area. They've made money every year for years and years and years. They're going to make $6.01 next year after making $5.40 this year, after making $4.76 last year. So that's about an 11 to 12% increase in earnings. Sales have been falling, though. Sales have been falling. So that's a problem. And the reason why would the sales of processed grains and oil seeds and fertilizers and edible oil, why would that sales be falling? Because the world economy is not doing that well. Okay, so if you're taking the earnings, it's going to make $6.01. It's a $60 stock. Now, it was a $48 stock in January. It's now a $60 stock. So is it a good value? Yes, it is a good value play. Pays 2.5% dividend, not much debt. Management owns 1%. Mutual funds have been slowly selling. Insiders have been slowly buying. So I kind of like it. I like this area. I think it's pretty defensive because of the whole food side of the stock market is defensive. So it's a good, solid company, been around a long time, and they just need to turn around those sales. And that's where you need to focus. What you need to focus on, what are they doing about turning their sales around? Okay, that's really the focus that you should have. I mean, the high of last year was $93 a share. That's the same high as the year before. So was it worth, I don't know, about $70, $75? Glad you can spend some time with me today. I'll share some ideas, I promise. Our number is 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk about, the incredible shrinking world of investments. When we say shrinking, we're not talking about the amount of money sloshing around. The amount of money sloshing around is still huge and not shrinking. But the shrinking is in the returns that you should expect. I've been telling clients, anybody who will listen, you need to expect smaller returns going forward simply because the interest rates are so low. Interest rates are so low that it's a domino effect on almost every asset of trying to get returns. You can't really get returns. Even from the stock market. Of course, look at bonds. I mean, some countries have negative rates. You can't get returns there. So I just think you just got to remember that the central banks around the world, not just here in the United States, not just our Fed, are all pushing down borrowing costs. Okay? And they're trying to do that to create, you know, more capital to force investors to enter riskier assets. And the Federal Reserve believe investments in risky assets would spur economic growth. What has happened, though, is growth has remained pretty subdued. And we have very low inflation and very low interest rates, and that means the stock market will have very low returns. So you just need to get used to the idea of lower than normal returns from the stock market. Now, it will greatly depend on your asset mix, what kind of assets, what's in your portfolio. I mean, there's assets that are doing very, very nicely. For instance, if you bought gold or oil at the beginning of the year, you should be pretty happy. But it's going to be that kind of market year, maybe into next year, the year after. What are you in? What's the mix of your assets? Because if you just stay with the S&P 500, what it is right now is flat. I think you go back all the way to 2013, it hasn't really gone anywhere. Anyways, this is InvestTalk, everybody. Your own personal capacity for risk is an important consideration, as we've been talking about for some time. And you need to think about risk when you decide on what strategy you're going to use. You can use our award-winning free risk analysis tool. It's free there on InvestTalk.com. 888-99-CHART is our number.
Hey guys, my name is Tim. I'm from San Francisco. Just had a quick question about WDR with Dell and Reed Financial. It has a pretty good dividend yield. I'm wondering if I should hold on to it or not. I've got a bunch of my portfolio in it right now, and I am thinking that there might be a correction this summer, and I'm wondering if I should hang on to it and continue to invest, or get rid of it now and then reinvest in the summertime, or what do you guys think? It's WDR. Thanks for your time. I love the show.
Okay, this is Waddle and Reed Financial. It's out of Kansas. Provides investment advisory, distribution, and administrative services to mutual funds and institutional accounts. And it has been steadily going down for a long time now, over a year. And I don't see any reason that it will stop. Earnings are going down to almost 30% this year to $2.05 from $2.94. And the high mark was in 2014 at $3.77 a share, then $2.94, then $2.05, and next year $2. So it's getting close to its bottom, it looks like. And simply because the stock price has been falling from $60 a share. I mean, it was at, in 2014, it was $76 a share. Now it's, you know, at 19. And so, of course, it makes the dividend yield go up because they're still paying the same percentage, the same amount per, they have been paying the same amount and even increased their dividend the last two times. So, you know, the cash flow is $3.68. Earnings, $2. And so if they're going to pay almost 10% of earnings, 10% on their stock, that's $1.90, and they're going to make $2. So that's very high and not sustainable. I don't see how that's going to be sustainable. And their sales shrinkage is increasing. 16% the most recent quarter shrinkage by 16%, 9% the quarter before that, 9% the quarter before that, 2%, and then 1%. You know, the quarters before that was growing. For me, I would not want to hold on to the stock. It looks inexpensive because, you know, it's a little less than a 10 PE. But stocks get really inexpensive, you know, before they go out of business. And I'm not saying they're going to business. They're not even close to that. But don't just think of that because it's a low price and low PE ratio that it's a good bargain. And it's not necessarily if they can't turn around the sales. And that's where the issue is. Why are the sales still shrinking? And that's what I don't care for. That's a problem. That's WDR is the symbol, WDR. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So why did Buffett buy $1 billion worth of Apple? Remember, he doesn't like tech stocks. And he bought, IBM a year or two ago? Now, this first quarter, he bought $1 billion worth of tech. Try to remember who he is, what kind of investor he is. Remember, we asked that question a lot on this show. You know, what kind of investor are you? Well, what kind of investor is Warren Buffett? He's a deep value investor. He never wants to overpay for stocks. He likes really good value. So what did he see in Apple that he apparently thought was really good value? And that you can only look at one factor which really makes him excited, and that's the ROIC, return on invested capital. Return on invested capital. And for the first quarter, it was 27.5%. That was the return on invested capital, and that's very high. That's down from 31.2% year ago, same quarter. But still, that's the 13th best return on invested capital of all the tech sector of the S&P 500, all the tech stocks. There's 228 of those, by the way. That's 13th best. Apple. And that's why he bought it, that deep value investing. He has faith in that. That's the way he always invests. Take a look at all his buys. He buys when things look really inexpensive to him and has really good return on invested capitals. You know, that includes return on equity, return on assets. How much are you getting back? How much is a company making on its capital? And capital means its shares, the stocks, its equipment, its cash. How much is it making back? And remember, that's with a lot of Apple cash, Apple tied up in cash. A lot of Apple value, the capital, is in cash, where they're not making hardly anything on it. and is still 27.5, 13th best of all the tech sector in the S&P 500, 228 stocks. So you got to be pretty impressed with that, and obviously he was. And that's why he did it. Not rocket science. It's not. It really isn't. And, you know, his one of his best sayings or most famous sayings, you buy when there's sellers and you sell when there's buyers. And, you know, how many people really want to buy Apple right now? Hardly anybody. We're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. If you'd like to schedule a portfolio checkup with me, I'll be in the San Jose next week, May 25th. May 25th. I'm also scheduling visits on Skype or telephone for May 31st. To get on the schedule, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
Thank you for subscribing to our podcast. And now there's a new way to get in touch between programs. If you have a question or comment, text us. Just text your message to 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and we'll answer your question on InvestTalk or by text reply if you wish. We are now text accessible at 888-99-CHART. With this Tuesday, May 17th Invest Talk, Steve is here to answer your questions, whether they're about earnings per share or a college savings plan. The number is the same, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Mark from Las Vegas. I've listened to your show for the last few months, and I appreciate all your help. Last January, a caller asked about the stock PAAS. And after your analysis and a little bit of research on my part, I took a position on it. Since then, it's doubled in price, and I'm wondering, what do you see looking forward? Thank you very much.
Okay, PAAS is Pan American Silver Corporation, Canadian company engaged in exploration, acquisition, and development of silver and other minerals in Mexico. Okay, so it's a Vancouver, British Columbia mining company engaged in mining in Mexico. It's, I've been talking about silver, gold, precious metals for much of this year and part of last year. We started investing in these kinds of companies last year. We got in a little too early. This seems to be our modus operandi. And these things have really, you know, these mining companies have really taken off. We have one and it doubled like this one, and we cut it in half. We took profits off the table. Okay, so now we're just invested with their money, basically. And, you know, this has still an uptrend, so I would still keep it and just have a close, you know, maybe a stop out of a trend line if it breaks below it. But I do think gold and silver is not done. I still think they have a ways to go, because I think that we're looking at, think about what is going on in the world, you know, as far as the central governments making their money worth less and less and less, and that drives up prices of these things, of precious metals. I don't think that trend's going to change. The fundamentals seem to support staying in precious metals. It seems to support that. That doesn't mean you're crazy, because this stock is overpriced now. It's going to make 25 cents a share next year, and it's a $16 stock. So it's pretty much overpriced. So, you know, taking money off the table is a pretty good idea after you've doubled your money. You know, it basically, you're rebalancing it. You want to sell back some of these huge winners that you've had, because they're now starting to dominate your portfolio, and you don't want that. I know you think you do, but you don't. Let's answer a couple of text questions. 888-992-4278. Again, that's 888-99-CHART, Now you can text me there. I got a position in ENDP when it was 1390. It was 1390 per share. Any reason from a valuation standpoint to not get more shares? It has some debt, but it's selling at low PE based on 2017 earnings per share. It's selling at less than book value. So let's take a look at ENDP, and that is Endo International. Develops branded and generic pharmaceutical products in areas of pain management, urology, oncology, and endocrinology. Okay, it's a $3.3 billion company. Sales have been increasing very nicely quarter after quarter after quarter for some time. And earnings have been going up well too. Not this year. They're going to flatten out this year to $4.59 per share. And next year it's going to be $5.04. And the stock is selling at $15. That's a 3 PE. Three PE. Now, this stock has taken a big hit. We have to find out, why did it take this big hit and why is it a 3 PE? You want to know why has it fallen so hard recently to get down to $15 a share? Now, that is the key if you're thinking about buying this stock. You have to find, I'm trying to look real fast and without reading it. I can't talk and read at the same time. But that's the problem. You need to find out why. And once you find out why, and this is for any stock, everybody. Once you find out why, and the why is temporary or nothing that seems like it's permanent, then you buy this kind of stock. If it's something, the why is something that's systemic and it's going to plague this company for years, you don't buy it. You stay away from it. I'll give you an example. What if something happened to their earnings because they have to restate last year or the year before, or they found something wrong with their bookkeeping? That's a bad problem. You don't want to be anywhere near it. But let's say they had a write-off of one time they got sued and they settled and it cost them a bunch of money, and that's what the one-time earnings hit was and damaged the stock. Well, that's a temporary thing. See, stuff like that, that's what I have to look at. ENDP. Another text message from Steve in San Francisco. Hi, guys. Love your show. I have a position in 20-year treasuries. TLT is the symbol, by the way. He's got an ETF of 20-year treasuries. Do you think it makes sense to stay with this one for the next 9 months? Well, what you want on treasury, when you have something like this, is you want interest rates to go down. You want rates to go down, because if they go down, the value of this will go up. And if you notice, even though the Fed raised rates in December, interest rates went down for the 20 and 30-year treasuries, not up. And we're producing now a flat curve, flat meaning the long rates of the U.S. government treasuries and the short rates are getting closer and closer together. And if you ever get an inversion, the last time we've had that happen was 2007. And the last time we had this flat curve of 20 and 2-year treasuries was in 2007. So it's getting a little worrisome because of that. So when you're saying, should you keep it for the next 9 months? I'm going to have to say, I'm not sure. It looks like it's near a top right now on a chart. And it's trading in the range for the last year. Since beginning of the year, like in February, it's just been trading in this range. And it really depends on whether you believe interest rates are going to go up or down. Which way do you think they're going to go? I can't say you hold it for 9 months. Because the Fed raises rates, that's going to be negative for this. But at the same time, I'm not so positive about the economy either going forward. So we'll see. Let's go to Mandy. He's going to talk about the ENDP. Mandy, do you know why it took such a big hit?
Yes. Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
By the way, I'm short on ENDP and the Valeant. Why ENDP is down? They have a $6 to $8 billion debt. They bought a company named Par Pharmaceutical in 2014.
Uh-huh.
for $8 billion. That company was sold for $2 billion, under $2 billion in 2012.
Oh. Oh.
So this company bought a company within 2 years from TPG Capital for $8 billion from 1.8. So they issued a lot of shares and took a lot of debt,
and took
their head office to Ireland. So they have now $8 billion debt.
I see.
From Par Pharmaceutical Buyout, same Valeant. Lot of company has done this.
Well, the question then is that $8 billion in debt, is that going to destroy the company? Are they going to be able to work their way out of it? I can see that they do have quite a bit of debt on as a percentage of their assets. So that can see...
$8 billion.
Yeah, I can see it. Are you going to stay with your short? Because it's fallen pretty hard.
Yes, because if you do the math, $6 billion is accessibly by a company who is not making that much money, even with the bar, and the tax regulations are coming.
Mm-hmm. Well, good luck with it. I hope it works for you. Good luck. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm for single digit.
Okay, that's nothing wrong with the strategy. Thank you for the call. When you join our Invest Talk Insider program, you get free anytime access to all sorts of useful information. Our own in-house realtor, Justin Klein, just completed a info sheet to help you with real estate. 10 questions to ask when picking an agent. An agent can cost or save you thousands of dollars. Now, you have instant access to this useful document when you sign up for free at investtalk.com, and there's a bunch of others there too. Just click on the Invest Talk tab.
It just may be the best investment you'll ever make. It's 1 hour of your time for an informational review of your retirement accounts. This is available to a limited number of our listeners. Steve will be in San Jose May 25th for these individual 1 hour informal meetings. For podcast listeners and others out of reach of our California offices, you can meet with Steve via Skype or telephone on May 31st. To schedule your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
Chinese consumers are beginning to spend just like U.S. consumers. Isn't that interesting? You know, China has been on a program for several years now to become more consumer-oriented in their economy instead of being so export-oriented, okay? And that is successful. You have to say it's successful, and it's a huge trend, a mega trend in China that will probably continue. Why? Because they still have a healthy job market. Incomes are still going up. And for instance, incomes have gone up 10% a year for the last 10 years. 10% a year. Doesn't happen here, that's for sure. So consumers the middle class have extra spending money. What are they doing with it? Well, one example is they're taking trips. The average Chinese spending $2,000 on a trip. Vacation. Now remember, they didn't used to have vacations, let alone spend a lot of money on one. And China is working, you know, the Chinese save a lot of money, just like the Japanese and others. Chinese save a lot of money because they have no pensions. There's no safety net. But the Chinese government is working on a pension. Working on a pension system for the citizens. When that happens, they're meaning the Chinese consumers, are probably not going to save as much. So I can't see the trend stopping. They're going to want things. They're going to want, if you're going to a consumer-driven economy, you entice the consumer to spend. And that's what you want. And that's what kind of economy you want. What you really want is a balanced economy. You don't want one to be dependent on exports. You don't want one to be dependent on, you know, your minerals and natural resources. You don't want it dependent on it. You're kind of balanced. And consumers are a very important part of that balance, working that balance up. So it amazes me that any consumer anywhere in the world, given the proper freedom and income, will spend pretty much similar to each other. You know, so I find that interesting. And you really got to pay attention to this because it should affect how you invest in China. how you invest in China, what you invest in, what kind of companies. Very important. Anyways, I thought that was a pretty interesting information that came out today. So we'll take a look. You know, the Fed Reserve has comes out next month. They're meeting next month. And they're talking about that a rate hike is definitely on the table. I have a feeling that it's not going to happen. But they say the Federal Reserve, you know, there's different Federal Reserve presidents around the districts, the Federal Reserve districts in the United States. And several of them have been talking up a rate recently. Now, the question in my mind is, they're just talking up a rate and they're not going to do it? Because don't think they don't manipulate us. They do. Okay, here's another email question. Let's get back to the text question. I'm not email, but text. Hi, what's your opinion on UA? Is now under $37. Where is the next support level that's good to buy, good buy point? You had said mid-30s before, but where specifically? Now, this is a problem. I want to make sure everybody understands that reading charts, chart reading, is not a science. It's an art. It tends to be true. So when you say, you know, when I say that it looks like support's coming in, you know, the low 30s, I'm looking at a chart and saying, well, this is where it found support before, and it, and investors tend to buy at a low point that hit before, tend to do it. And if you want an actual number, I would say it's about $34. $34 a share is about where it will go. It's $36.89 now, so it's pretty close. And this is UA, Under Armour, everybody. You know who Under Armour is. Apparel, footwear, accessories, from moisture-wicking synthetic fabrics. You know, that's their thing. They're going to make 67 cents a share this year, then 85 cents a share next year. It's a $36 stock, so it's not cheap. But the sales growth are 30%. So if you even give it a 30 PE though, 30, you're looking at a $25 stock and it's 36. I mean, it's pretty hard to justify, you know, fundamentally buying it because it's inexpensive, because it's not. Even if it gets into the low 30s, it's still not inexpensive. But their sales are growing pretty fast. You know, everybody focuses on that. Under Armour, UA, UA. We're going to talk about why they're old people. What are their financial regrets looking back over their life? This is a survey, and there's an article written about it. But what are some of their financial regrets? What regrets? What's their number one regret? Number one. I got six of them, six in order of their regrets. And that, we're going to talk about that. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley, a registered investment advisor. If you still have a question, we still have time. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hey guys, my name's Kyle. I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. I listen to you guys via podcast. I have a question about my 401k. I'm 27 years old. I have a company-sponsored 401k, and I'm invested about 95% in stocks and 5% in a money market account. Is that too aggressive? Thanks, and I look forward to hearing your answer on the program. Bye.
I would say, in general, the answer is no, based on your age, based on your age of 27 years old. Yeah, you need to be aggressive and just stay aggressive, because you got 30 years at least of investment timeline. So a person at that age should be aggressive. Now, having said that, that's what you should do. The question is, how comfortable are you being aggressive? Is that the type of investor you are? And can you sleep at night? Does it bother you? And if your answer is no, it doesn't bother me, then leave it aggressive and stay aggressive. If you're the kind of investor that worries about it, you know, keeps you up, and you're agonized over a penny move up and down that it moves, then you probably should not be that aggressive. But as a professional looking at you and time horizon in a retirement account, You should be aggressive for the next 20 years, at least. Next 20, maybe 30. It's just be aggressive and stay aggressive. And that's what you should do. Now, what is the investment that you're aggressive with? That's important too. But yeah, the answer is just stay aggressive. Financial regrets for older folks like me and some of you guys out there. These are people that basically, this is a survey, and basically asking questions about people in retirement. Okay, and what was their biggest financial regret? And you probably could guess what it is. Number one, not saving enough money for retirement early enough. So they're worried about running out of money. Number two, not saving money for emergencies. Remember when you talked to me or we've talked about when people I met that you should have at least 3 months minimum to maybe 6 months or more of monthly salary saved up for emergencies. That's your emergency fund. Number three, taking too much student loans. Isn't that interesting? Remember, these are older folks. Taking too much in student loans was one of their regrets. What, are we talking about way back when? Was there that much student loans back then? Seems kind of odd to me. Too much credit card debt, number four. Number five, not saving enough for children's education. I hear that a lot, you know, when I talk to clients that, you know, they don't have enough for their college and, you know, what should they do? And it's always difficult, especially your kid's only a year or two away from college. You really can't do a lot. You have to start a year early. And buying a bigger house than they can afford. That was number six. So those were the regrets that they were having. And they were common sense regrets. So if you want to avoid that, number one, save more money, people. More money in your IRAs, your 401ks, wherever you can, save more money for your retirement. There's lots and lots of studies, and I've shared them with you on the air, showing that people do not have nearly enough money saved up. Almost every part of the age groups of workers don't have enough money saved, not saving enough. And you can't, you know, relying on Social Security, that's supposed to be, always was designed as a supplemental only. Not your retirement, only this is supplemental to your retirement. And people treat it as, well, that's my main income. Well, if it is, you're going to live in poverty. So don't do that. Don't do that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. You know, we had a couple things we want to talk about. You know, earnings season is winding down. We don't have much left. It's just a trickle here and there now. I'm talking about from the first quarter. And there's a problem with transparency of those earnings. Corporations are not being very transparent, even when they're reporting under the GAAP, General Accounting Principles, system that they're supposed to. They're still not transparent. Our time is up. Before we go, I want to announce a new way to get in touch with us between programs. You can have a question or comment. You can text it. Text it to us. Just text your message to 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and we'll answer your question on InvestTalk or by text reply if you wish. So we are now text accessible, 888-99-CHART. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.